Still snow on the ground, I assume, for you guys.
Always. Yeah, it's not going anywhere. I think this is it.
It's a permafrost.
This is it.
This is it. I have a glacier in my backyard.
Yeah. We do too, which is super weird. This is the longest we've had snow on the ground probably in my lifetime. I mean, as long as I can remember, you know, and it hasn't moved. Yesterday, it started thawing just a little bit, enough to where when you walk on it, it would break. The ice that's in the middle of it would break underneath you, you know, and you'd fall an inch. And so I think in the next couple of days, we'll probably start to see it change a little bit. But so far, it's been unchanged.
The good news is, look how well my face is lit right now. And that is because snow is a great diffuser and reflector.
It's pushing the light through.
Yeah, we got nice even lighting all throughout the office.
Yeah, but in my bedroom, when, you know, I'm trying to go to sleep and I have my blackout curtains, there's this glow around the curtains that just bleeds in because the moon is like, hey, look, reflective surface.
Yeah, the moonlight has been quite beautiful. I didn't realize it was because of so much of the snow. That's a good point.
Yeah, everything is very bright. Huge sky here. And it's weird because I guess with this time of year or something, when the sky is not clear, it's very hazy at night, or maybe that haze is always there and it's just catching the moonlight. But not only is the ground reflective, but it seems like the sky is reflective too lately. And so, you know, we have this puppy, and I've been taking the puppy out a lot, you know, in the evenings and stuff, trying to have him not have an accident. And so, yeah, I've been out a lot at night looking at the backyard and looking at the snow and the moon and all of it. It is pretty for sure, but I am kind of ready for it to start melting.
Definitely.
So I was out yesterday working on the siding for the pool house. And I haven't been able to get out there for several days because it was too cold. You know, I mean, like hammering nails, doing
anything. I've not been at the graveyard house at all.
In you know, 13, 14 degree weather, this just doesn't make sense. But yesterday it got above freezing for the first time in a couple of weeks. I actually made some really good progress on it.
And what did you decide for the siding?
So I got it's a composite board and batten. So it's not vinyl. It feels like vinyl, cuts pretty easily, but apparently it's like some glass composite something. I don't know. But it's a board and batten thing. So you know,
it's all good. Vertical.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm figuring out how to do I did the corners and then figured out how to do all of the different trim pieces that it all fits into. And I have the tall wall finished at this point, behind the pool equipment. There's a 10-foot section, and then there's a roof, and then there's a little, I don't know, not 2-foot section, but a little roof section. Got all that done. So that was the easy rectangular wall, and I wanted to do that first to get a feel for how to do it all. And then now I'm working on the walls with the windows and the doors and the angles and all the weird stuff. So, but it's actually going pretty well.
That's fun.
And the weather made it possible to finally get to do that. I've just been waiting for a while.
Yeah, the weather's definitely got me stifled. There are things I want to do. I think I haven't started the project this week yet. Today's Wednesday. I have all day tomorrow. I think I could do a one-day build tomorrow. And every time I go to my mailbox, the door's hanging open, and it got bent. So I was trying to bend it back, and the little voice in my head said, hey, stupid, why don't you make a new mailbox?
Mm-hmm.
And not to mention, when I'm waiting for that part or that CNC bit I ordered or something, I'm like, where the hell is it? My mail person usually brings my mail up and she leaves it on this little spot on my porch on top of a box. Everybody always leaves packages and mail. And when I don't get mail for 3 days, I'm just like, oh, I guess I didn't get mail. But that's just the day that she decides to just use the car and stick the stuff in the mailbox. And I go down to the mailbox and it's completely overstuffed with 3 packages that just happened to fit in there. And all the mail at the back is all crunched up and jammed in because sometimes the UPS guy just, if it fits in there, he'll just shove it into the mailbox. So it's a standard size mailbox, but occasionally up here you see those big giant ones. So I might make it a bigger one so it could accept more packages, which happens more often.
So you can check it less often?
Yes. I'll check it once a month instead of once every 4 days.
How convenient.
Yeah.
It's always like, where are those needles? I'm supposed to get those needles. And then it's one of those UPS packages that's like 18 by 18 with one little pack of 10 needles in the corner. But it's all folded up and integrated into the mail, jammed into my mailbox. And yeah. So I think I might make a mailbox and a little rustic metal wood style. I still have a lot of the porch planks left over, so I might make like a little arch top treasure chest looking thing, but with the un door opening. So I got a couple of ideas formulating. I thought of that yesterday afternoon. I thought I was going to get into something else, but I just haven't gotten that spark of inspiration, which is what you need sometimes. My friend called me yesterday morning and said, can you make this heart for the window of my store? She wants to do a bullseye thing with heart-shaped arrows. And I said, oh, great. I'll do it because it gives me something to do. It helps me promote Onefinity. And so I started working on that. I woke up with that was not on my list of things to do. Then all of a sudden I had something to do. Besides cleaning, and the tow truck is really coming along. There's only a couple of things left on the checklist, which to put the seat in. But I bought on Amazon an $80 Southwest blanket. Car seat's like $250, so I just went on Amazon and bought a Southwest blanket, which I'm just going to wrap the seat with this old Southwest blanket because the seat is ripped. I did fill in all these Chevys are the same. Every square body Chevy, the seat rips where you get in and out of the truck. So the whole corner on the driver's side of the seat and the back is rubbed into a hole from getting in and out, and you're pilling up the exposed foam, and you're pilling it up, and you're pilling it up. And every Chevy's got it. The driver's side seat is ripped open, and there's a cavity of no foam. So I saw this technique where the guy built up the missing foam with pieces of other foam all spray glued together, and then you could grind it with the angle grinder and shape it. So I did that. So that's going to be a little cool little spot in the video. And then I just patched it with just scraps of leather. I didn't feel like sewing it or anything. So it's all glued in. And then on top of that, I'm going to wrap it with the Southwest blanket. And that's going to be more permanently affixed to the car. So I'm taking some shortcuts here and there because it's not a show car. And I'm bringing it back to life. So I'm excited about that. We're ready to turn the key and start it with its own gas tank and everything. Up till now, moving it around, I just always had a gas tank under the hood. But everything's rewired, relined, replumbed everywhere. So just need some help with the electrical. Keith Drennan's going to help me with that. Blackthorn Concepts. And yeah, that's about it. And I'm going to meet, some people know this, I think this weekend I might go to Rhode Island. You guys know Lou Tips from a Shipwright? It's a channel that's been around for a while. Lou Swazell makes boats. He's been a boat builder for a very long time, older guy. And he's going to build the Orca. You know, the boat, the Orca.
Oh, yeah. You mentioned that. Yeah.
Yeah. From Jaws. So we're going to have a meeting on what I'm going to be doing on the Orca. It's a long-term project. It's going to take a couple of years. He hasn't even built the bow or he hasn't even built the bottom of the boat yet. Which, by the way, Dave, I got to get you those plans. They're sitting in I saw them yesterday. I was going to mail them over to you.
Thank you.
For the rowboat. And, yeah, that's it. The winter definitely feels like it's holding me back. It's been 10 degrees. Every time I go to the shop, I have to take the long way along the driveway. I usually cut through the yard, but there's a permafrost and it's still at least 18, 20 inches deep to walk from the house. It's like walking on the side of Mount Everest.
That's wild. Ours is frozen, you know, at different layers in it, and then the top is now refrozen. So we're walking on the top of 5-6 inches, not sinking down in it. But
no, mine's all still powdery because it hasn't gotten warm enough yet for that layer of ice to build up. It's still powdery. My driveway's all shovel though, so I could walk down, but it's the long way. It's like a couple of hundred extra feet to walk on the driveway. So every time I'm like, I left my camera down, because I'll shoot all day and then leave my camera on the table, come up to the house and be like, let me go download the footage. I left the camera down there, so I got to walk all the way back down there. I just rode 10 miles on the bicycle. So it's like, I'm like annoyed. I'm like, I just did 10 miles on the bike. It's okay if I walk another couple of thousand feet. So no big deal.
It is very Groundhog Day like right now.
Yeah.
With, you know, it just looks the same outside. Nothing's changing. My kids have not been in school for a week and a half.
So
everybody's home, which is fine, but we have the same setting, you know, like all the time. And it's kind of weird starting to lose track of what day it is, and nothing changes. And
so just the kitchen in this weather, you start. This is the first time in that I could ever remember when my laundry room froze. My laundry room is at the end of an extension on the house that was added on years ago. So my house, if you look at it, it's like a big T. The top part of the T is what would be the cross of the T faces the road, and the back extension is the leg of the T. And that leg has a crawl space under it that doesn't have a basement under it. And the porch wraps around that, the back porch where I put the new poles. That's what I'm talking about, that section. The wind blows under the porch. And when the wind blows from the west to the east, the pipes freeze along that wall. But when I put the garden beds there, it never happened again because it blocks the wind from going under the house. And this season, the laundry room doesn't get water. And if it gets water, because those pipes, I described it like this to Rachel because she didn't understand. I said, put your hand out and your pointer finger is about as thick as a supply pipe, but your wrist is about as thick as the drain. So the supply pipe will melt first. So I'll get water, but it takes another 4 or 5 hours for the drain pipe to melt because there's a trap in the crawl space for the drain for the washroom and this kitchen sink. So I was thinking, how can I get heat under the crawl space? But there's dust and bird's nests and all kinds of stuff under there and just tumbleweeds from the wind. How do I keep a fire from starting under the house? I can't use a propane heater. I can't use one of those like glowy red things because I couldn't sleep because it's just, it's making intense heat right there. There's these like baseboard ones you could plug in and stick in a hole. And it occurred to me, I have this smoke extractor, which is what I had attached to the plasma table. Goes the plasma table is a downdraft table. At the end is a big exhaust pipe. It's about 12 inches in diameter. So I hook this fan right onto it with a couple of sheet metal screws. And then there's this 25-foot long tube that you would typically see on a fire truck. These things are used for expelling smoke from inside of a house. So I took that and I put it right in front of the boiler, which is always warm. And I have it sucking hot air from around the boiler, and the big rubber tube goes all the way up, and I have it stuffed into the crawl space. So it sounds like there's a turbo engine running in the basement, but it's literally pulling hot air. I got that idea from chit-chatting with Derek, because Derek's like, you need something that you need to pump hot air into that thing. And I was like, yeah, I don't know how I'm going to do that. And then I got off the phone. I was like, I have this thing that sucks air from one side. I took it off the plasma table. I have it usually stuck through a window in the workshop. So I dragged it all the way up here. And so now when I go to turn on the washing machine and I don't get water right away, I know I have a problem. So I go down and I flip on the heater. It takes about 2 hours and it warms it up. So every morning I wake up and I look, and right now it just went from 13 this morning to 16 degrees now. So I'm pretty sure the water, and as long as the wind is down, the house is good. But if the wind is up, it's like, I feel like I'm in a storm on a ship. When the wind is up, it's like, okay, we got to make sure that room is warm so that pipe doesn't freeze or this thing doesn't, you know. Well, we'll close all the doors and just heat up the bedroom. You just got to contract, like the house is going to get frostbite. You got to contract to the heart of the house, which is like the kitchen and the bedroom and the office. And I mean, got a bit of, I don't know what the third floor is. It's probably snowmen up there moved in.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, do you just, like, at this time of year, do you block off the upper levels and outside?
Well, Rachel's got her office in the top floor, so she'll call me. She goes to the city every week, so she'll call me before she comes home from the city, and she'll be like, turn on the heat in my office so that it takes a day to warm up there. Mm-hmm. If you leave a cup of water up there, it'll be frozen. But with the heat on, but there's no frozen pipe. There's no pipes on the third floor, so there's nothing to worry about up there. But there are plants and stuff. There's nothing to freeze and break on the third floor. But third floor will get, if it's 10 degrees outside, the third floor will be 30 degrees.
Oof.
But I'm sure I'm losing a lot of heat through the house, but I don't know what else to do. I can't spray foam my second floor. Spray foam up the stairwell.
You could.
It'd be a great video.
Yeah.
I do need to spray foam the, so I said, I described the house as like a T shape. So the big T is the original, the top of the T is the original shape of the house. And the extension has more heat in the upper floor. So I spray foam that 10 years ago. I didn't spray foam the big part of the house. I still need to. So when you look at the house on, once it snows and you step back and you look at the house, the insulated part, the snow is still on top because the heat's not getting through it. But the uninsulated part, you see all the snow melts fast. So there's so much heat just going straight up to the roof of my house. I need to address it.
So you do.
The big part of the house, the snow melts off the roof and slides off while it's snowing. It's not a good thing.
In my...
I came home... Sorry, go ahead.
Where my shop is a detached garage, and when it snows, it, you know, covers the roof, of course. And then you can see right one place where the snow always melts, or there's no snow on the roof. I'm like, oh, I need to insulate that. That's why my shop is cold.
Yeah.
So I have this attic access, and that's right where that snow is melting, or at least not collecting on the roof right there. And so I'm like, okay, I'm going to just seal all this off. I don't have to go up in the attic for anything until March or April. I'll be good. The moment I seal it all off and I screw up some insulation boards, the next day I'm like, you know what? There's a tripod up there that I need. I got to go get that. But, yeah, so it's inconvenient, but it definitely helps. And then you could see light coming through. There's two doors to the shop, and you can just see light coming through. And so I ordered a bunch of foam off of Amazon, and I'm like filling the gaps, and I'm shutting the door, and I turn all the lights off, and I can still see light coming through, and I'm just getting so frustrated. And I'm like, you know what? I've been wanting to replace these doors for 2 years, and I went right over to the garage and window, or the door window store down the road, and I need two doors. And I pick them out, and they're like, we're 3 months out. So I'm not getting new doors until it's warm out again. But
yeah,
next winter is going to be much better.
Dang, that's crazy.
Yeah, there's something wrong.
Sizes or something?
What's that?
Are they specialty size doors or something?
No, they're regular, whatever it is, 36 inch doors by 80, but we're redoing the whole door frame. So they take them all out, and then I'm getting new storm doors. My storm doors are just kind of barely hanging on. My garage is not that old. I think it's only 20 years old, but it was poorly made. Like, there are so many signs of it being very poorly made. And the doors were one of them. The foundation was another thing. So,
but I was going to say, it's a bad sign when you look at your house and you could see the silhouettes of all the rafters and all the, in the patterns of the melting snow. You shouldn't be able to see that. Shouldn't be able to see the x-ray of your roof through the melted snow.
Yep.
I noticed in our neighborhood, you can look at the different roof lines and see different amounts of insulation, you know, based on what's exposed. And as it's starting to melt, especially, you know, you can see the parts that go first. But David, what have you been doing? What have you been up to?
So I think I mentioned it last week. We went to the Goodwill and we found three pieces of ugly art that I am remaking into what I think is not ugly art. And that is getting finished up today. The video is not coming out for another week or so because there's a launch date for the sponsor of the video. But it was one of those, like, I had to put the VCR build on hold for a little bit because it was way more complicated. I needed something to just work on now. I'm like, oh, let's go to Goodwill and find some stuff. And I was hoping to find a piece of furniture. And then while we were there, we found these really three ugly pieces of art. And it was kind of funny, kind of a joke at the time of like, what happens if we recreate this? And it just turned out really good. Like, the three pieces that I made, I think they're going to end up in the art show this summer. Because I thought it was going to be a silly project. And it just came out way better than expected. One of them was this framed, like, 11 by 18 mermaid, but string art. So it had all the nails in there and then the string art. Wow. Yeah. And so I took that and I made my version. So I'm trying to be influenced by the old art, but make new pieces. So instead of a mermaid, I drew up a mermaid skeleton. And then did the nail art, but then instead of using string, colored string, we use fishing line because it kind of fits in with the mermaid theme. But we did this whole cool, like, acrylic textured background, and it's got, like, we laid down some burlap and threw a bunch of acrylic paint over top of that. So it has this cool, like, it came out really cool and got colors bleeding through. I don't know how to explain it, but that came out really good. There was another piece that it was like a 12 by 12 sign, and it had this ugly, it was very, very Target-y type sign, like Target the store, and it says hi in a script letter, and I took that. But the script letters is this metal cutout that is offset from the background by like an inch. And so I took that, I used a different word, I don't want to give away too much, and then I rusted some metal, and it's really hard to explain, but I'm really excited about it. And I thought it was going to be a silly project, and it turns out like this is a really, really cool project. So I hope it does well. A lot of my Goodwill transformation videos do all right, but they're usually furniture. And if it does well, this could become a fun series, because I've had such a good time filming this video, especially with the new camera guy and getting to know him and trying to figure out our workflow. I'm really excited about this video.
So how are you gonna present that in a thumbnail? I'm curious.
We shot a thumbnail of me holding the three pieces of crappy Target mom art, me holding it up in front of the Goodwill. And the title is going to be something along the lines of recreating crappy thrift store art, but good. But, you know, something worded better. Gotcha. Yeah. Packaging's hard.
Because there's three pieces and there's a before and after for each piece. Like, that's a lot to try to... Yeah.
I think the game plan for this one is to not give away the final one in the thumbnail and let there be a curiosity gap. Like, how is he turning this scrapbook mom art into pachuto art, you know?
Yeah.
Packaging's hard. It's so hard.
It is super hard.
I put so much effort into all my videos. I care about all of them so much. And, you know, I just don't know how to package them. And then some of them just completely fail.
Yeah. I'm in the same spot. Transformer customized Transformer video is coming out this next weekend, and it's one of those things where, like, the end result of it is like, look, it doesn't do anything, it doesn't, you know, it's like, look at this, here it is, done. And so we absolutely could not put that in the thumbnail, and so I had to figure out, before I even started shooting, I had to figure out how to make the video about less about the thing and more about an idea that gets presented in the thumbnail. And then in the last few frames, you just get to see the final result. But it's hard. I think a lot of people that don't do YouTube as a job where there are stakes at it, they don't realize maybe how much forethought can go into some of this stuff to try to figure out how to make it work when you're done with it. Like, it's just one of those.
I was having this conversation with the new guy, Jefferson is his name, and he doesn't know a lot about the inner workings of YouTube. And I was like, yeah, the gurus will tell you to come up with a title and thumbnail first and then work on the project. So you're always working towards that headline, that packaging. And I was telling him, like, that's conflicting for me, because I want to make the thing that I want to make that means something to me. And so a lot of times I approach it the way I think most people would approach a project. You do the thing and then you figure out how to sell it later. And all the gurus will tell you, like, that is completely wrong. And so, you know, you're constantly, and I usually film the intro last, because I don't even know what the story is of the video until I'm done with the video. Mm. And, it's just this internal conflict of, like, do I need to make a video so I can make a living, or do I make a video because I want to make this thing? You know, you gotta balance it out.
I think one of the things that's hard about that, and I just thought about this while you were talking, is that, you know, you say the gurus will tell you this one thing, the way to do it, and I think that's because this is not exclusive to us by any means, but I think that's because the people that tell you to give that advice, which is good advice, like, I'm not knocking it, their, like, identity priority is YouTube creator, and next it's personality, and next it's finance person, artist, maker, plant grower, whatever, you know, the subject is. And so that that identity priority, that first thing is how do we sell the thing? And then it's like my authority over how I sell the thing. And then it's like, oh, I know some stuff about plants or about cars or about whatever. And so I think one of the struggles that maybe you and I both have with that is that that outside priority is not how do you sell something on YouTube. It's I like to make things. I like to art things. I like to whatever. I like to explore things. I like to art things.
That's a good title.
How you get that to the outside world is not first priority. It's third, fourth, fifth priority. I never really thought about that before, but that actually makes me feel a little bit better about who I am because I know that my priority is not the selling of the thing.
It's not the selling. And
for better or worse, you know, I'm not saying that's the right way to do it. I just,
yeah,
I know that about and myself.
Something that I absolutely respect about Jimmy is you don't make videos. I mean, you don't either, Bob, but I mean, I think for Jimmy, it's like Jimmy just makes the thing that he wants to make. He's like, I haven't started a video this week. Oh, I hate my mailbox. I'm just going to make a mailbox. And like doesn't care about how it's going to, you do care about how it's going to perform, right. But you just make the thing. And
yeah, well, I honestly, when I have no control over marketing algorithm, I definitely feel like I'm being suppressed in the algorithm in Instagram and in, and Derek made a good point about possibly why. I could talk about that. It's not salacious. It's just stupid. But I definitely feel like I'm being suppressed everywhere. And I have no control over it. All I can do is just keep building my library. And I always go back to the core of what got me started, which is I just like making stuff. And I'm not making it because it gets clicks. I'm not making it. I certainly want clicks. I certainly want. So when I go back, and the reason why is not really for my ego. It's really more for like, is the advertiser going to drop me because my channel views are low? That's what makes me nervous because that translates to dinner and mortgages and that, you know, so that's really what it is. And that's what makes us nervous is when your views go down, it's not really an ego thing. It's a like, oh boy, do I have to get a real job?
Yeah.
59 years old. Do I have to get a real job?
Yeah. And it's not like, oh, that video performed well. Like if your views go down, that's future sponsorships that don't want to sponsor you because you have lower views. Yeah. And
but the point I was getting to finish up my thought was sometimes you do things for the clicks and that's when I have to try and come up with something that's salacious for an advertisement or whatever. And I try my best, but I feel like I'm 10 feet underwater anyway. So the only thing I could do is hopefully get a little bit closer to the surface. You know, I haven't gotten a million view video in a really long time. But so just to think about the potential reason why it's been a slow decline. But about a year ago, I had an issue with Facebook. And I don't know if I talked about this publicly or not, but Voo Media said, we're having an issue. I was making like tens of thousands of dollars on Facebook for a minute there. And then all of a sudden I was making nothing. And I was like, what happened? They go, they basically put you on the timeout list because we made a couple of videos of weapons and tools. And then that put you in the category of domestic terrorist or whatever they want to call it, you know, domestic terrorist light. And so because they picked like a pumpkin destroyer and an axe made out of, you know, a car tire, whatever the hell the videos were, they hit a few of them. And then that triggered the Facebook police to be like, oh, we have to suppress this guy because he's going to teach people how to make weapons. And that's what happened to my Facebook page that has over a million followers on it.
Similar story.
They didn't abandon it. Well, they didn't get rid of it. They abandoned it gently by saying, okay, let's just put this, all this, let's activities making $10 a month. Let's just let that keep making $10 a month and let's start another Jimmy DiResta Facebook page. And that's why they're very aggressive with the new Facebook page. And every day my mother's like, oh, that's a wonderful door knocker. And I'm like, what's my mother talking about? Oh, Vu made a video out of my door knocker from 3 years ago. And my brother will send me a message because my brother and my mother are real Facebook people, and my brother be like, dude, that bookshelf is insane. I'm like, what is he talking about? And I go to Facebook and there's like a 1 minute video of me making a bookshelf from 6 years ago. And what they must be having a lot of fun because Vu is taking, I got five videos out of the Cadillac, five 35 minute videos, and they're taking like, how do I unfreeze the engine and turn that into a 1 minute video? So out of every one of those 30 minute videos, they're getting tens and tens of like 1 minute reels, which is great.
Yeah.
So the audience and the income is building, and that's the Facebook page that is most active. I think it's the one where I'm wearing a blue shirt. They just found a picture of me online and made that the, what irks me though is when I see like somebody's like, Jimmy, how much for that? And then like underneath it, I'm saying that's not for sale right now, but thank you for watching. You know, that's somebody at Vue Media answering in my voice. I'm like, oy.
My Facebook page got demonetized because of them.
What?
Yeah.
I got demonetized. Like all of a sudden my checks were zero. I wasn't making tens of thousands, but you know, it was,
the most I made with Vue, and I'm not going to lie, is like $8,000-$9,000 for a couple of months.
Wow.
And then all of a sudden,
I wasn't
like
getting anywhere near that.
It was like $8. I was like, what's going on here?
But I got demonetized because it took a while to figure out why. And then it was like, oh, somebody from another country, was posting videos and you're not eligible. And so, I've gone through and like,
what do you mean? They were taking your videos and then claiming them as yours?
So people who work for that company also work in France. And so somebody from France or whatever country, the video came, it looked like the posting was from a different country and not the United States. And you are not eligible to make money because this post was not from the United States.
Oh, but and it's your content made here.
Yeah. So I went through and I did all the appeals over and over, like at least 2 dozen times.
Yeah,
and
you're fighting
no human.
Against,
you can't get anybody. You can't get in contact with anybody at Facebook. It is just, it's horrible. I spent so much time trying to get it back, and then I went through and I saw a video of like, yeah, I had to go and delete all my old content to get my monetization back, and I did that going back years, and I'm still demonetized. I'm still not eligible to make money. And I don't know what to do. And Vue tried to help, but they tried to help. And they're like, okay, you need to pay for your Facebook verified or premium, which is like $10 a month. And you try to get on a chat with Facebook. Off. And you have to do it because it's your thing. And I try. Facebook is so freaking confusing.
It's like so complicated is, when you go and you go horrible. In the back end and are you business? It's like, I have no idea what the... There was a minute horrible. There where I was in control of that page. Because I got it back from Jelly Smack, so it was all sent back to me, and now it's I'm in charge of it. In the first few months, when I was making some money with Vue, by the way, if this Vue, is a little behind,
V-O-O-V.
This is like Vue is a company that farms your content, and then was it Vue or Voom? What is it?
It's Vue.
Vue. They farm your content and put up videos for you. So any of that Facebook stuff, I don't really have anything to do with other than the fact that I created the original content.
They take the YouTube videos and they make it into little bite size. Yeah.
And then they take some of the money. They take, I don't know, it's a 60-40 split, I think. I think that's what it is. And somewhere my agent takes a piece of that too. But there, in the beginning, since I was in control of that page, they every month, the ritual of like, okay, go to back thing, follow this link, go here, go to the third one down, click the right one. No, the right one. Yeah, that one. And then you're in here. Okay, go to the door on the left, click that and hit the star and then go down, no further, click that. And then it says $10,000 or whatever. I'm like, okay. I'm like, oh, gee. It's so complicated. And so now that they started the new one, I just get money deposited to my account. Because they started it. They go, what's your PayPal? I go, this is my PayPal. So the beginning of every month, I get a few $100 now. It's building. Because it's
a
slow build.
I had a conversation with, you remember me talking about the character Tavin? Joel Berry does this character Tavin.
The Hick?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hilarious. Yeah. And Joel's a great guy. Joel's coming to do a show near us in April. So we were talking about, seeing him while he's here. And he was asking me about Facebook stuff. And kind of was in the same place. Like, he just doesn't know how to get it monetized. And we had the same conversation about how impossible it is to get a human on the phone or over email or anything with Meta. Like, it's truly a terrible system, and especially for how big it is and how worldwide and how much reach they have, or we could potentially have using the platform. Absolutely terrible with user experience on the website and customer service for the people that, you know, help make them money to not be able to get any sort of help doing.
I can understand it because you can imagine, like, they'd be on the phone with my mother every 10 minutes. Where is the picture?
Well, I mean, yeah, but if,
you know,
if,
and then
if
us, like people like us,
that being more complicated is bringing in money for the channel owner, but also for Meta. So it's in their best interest to at least have some sort of a, even if it's 20 levels deep of, you know, of email or whatever to get to a human, like there should be a way to be able to get some sort of support. It would only do them good, I would think. It's not like they're hurting for money either to like have people available, but yeah. Anyway, he was having the same thing because it is difficult. We had an idea of something to talk about today, and David, you brought up convenience. You said that had been on your mind lately. You want to tell us about
that? Yeah. The example that I gave was, I've been seeing a lot of suggested videos about, this is in the music side, but a lot of people going back to CDs or going back to actual iPods because streaming, it's too easy. You don't have a connection to the music anymore. And I was thinking like, yeah, I don't think that's going to become a huge trend going back to CDs or going back to like physical iPods because it's just not convenient. We're all trained so hard for convenience. So it's real easy to, whether you have Apple Music or Spotify, to just stream whatever you want. And maybe for the super music snobs, which I'm in that camp, but only those people are going to do the physical media. And I think that translates into a lot of what we do is, we enjoy convenience. And then you brought up the point, Bob, of like, there's some things we don't want convenient because maybe we like the process or whatever. And I got, and the perfect example of that is I got a scroll saw 6 months ago and my laser cutter can do everything the scroll saw can and faster and perfect. But sometimes it is really meditating and fun to just cut something out on the scroll saw. So this is going to take me an hour and a half to do on the scroll saw, or I can do it in 5 minutes on the laser. And I go back and forth because sometimes I do want the convenience, but sometimes I do want the experience. And so maybe there's a topic there. I'm not sure.
Well, I think there is. There's a few topics there, honestly. But one of the things you said is that we're so trained about the music thing. We're so trained for the convenience. And we are, all of us, no matter what it is you're talking about. We get trained by the simplicity of something. And one of the things that I think is really interesting about that is that I'll speak for myself, is that I accept that training as if it is the only way a lot of times. Things become easy, things are streamed, and so I assume that, well, that's the way it should be done now because of modern times, because it's available, because it is an option. But I think there's also something really important about realizing, remembering that you have agency over your training. And you can decide to allow yourself to be trained by social media, by society, by your family, by your close friends, by the communities you're involved in. You get to decide how much of that indoctrination is the wrong word, but you know what I mean? Like the influence, it comes in from all those things and how you let it affect who you become, what you decide to do, what becomes a habit, what becomes training. And there's certain things that I think it's really good to make an active decision against training, being trained. Like in the case of streaming music, if that is something that you really care about, if you value, just I'm just picking the other side of the coin here, if you value making sure an artist gets paid for their music, buying the album and then putting it on a physical device that you can listen to without advertising for a company that's in between. If that is a concern for you or like a thing that you care about, then you can actively decide to be trained toward that rather than streaming's available. I can have every song ever in the history of the world and the people who made the songs don't really get any money from it, but that's the way it is. You know, we can do that. Mm-hmm. Same goes for like video streaming services. Well, I like a show on this network and on this service and on this service, so I guess I'm going to have to pay for all the services just because that's the way it's done now. Like, we don't have to do that, and we can
actively decide to. I get overloaded, by the way.
I am limiting myself to not just feel like I should do what everybody else is doing when it comes to the technology end of it. And the same thing goes for the shop. Like, you know, we talk about lasers, CNCs, 3D printers all the time because we enjoy them, we like to use them, and they make our jobs easier and faster, right? So the people listening could be influenced by us to say, well, that's the way it's done now. I guess I should get a laser because that's how people do it now. But I think I just want to point out the fact that all of us individually have agency over deciding how we are influenced and how much of it we just go with and how much of it we can fight back against and say, no, I want to blister my fingers cutting the thing rather than pushing a button. It's okay to do that. And I think it's actually good for us to do that whenever it makes sense. So
I out of college, I got a job at a newspaper and we were right on the edge of doing things the old way with film. Film cameras and film page layouts to going digital. And so I got to experience both. And there's so much value in doing something the hard way by hand and understanding what it used to take and understanding what it means. And then really appreciating the digital form of that. Like, I used to develop film every single morning and then scan the negatives for the reporters. And then we transitioned to digital, and it was just like, you just download the photos off the phone. And, you appreciate the convenience a lot more when you've done it the hard. I know this sounds like an old man, like in my day.
I was going to say, we're all Gen X. So we all understand. Well, I was trying to articulate what I wanted to say about convenience of, say, for instance, automobiles, because this kind of started because of a conversation we had in the beginning before we hit record. The convenience of having a new car, you could just hop in, the radio pops up, everything pops up, the seat's warm, you can start the car from your phone. The convenience of, we understand that We're basically like in a convenience. I picture the metaphor of us being all the way out on a tree limb and hoping it doesn't snap, because the minute your battery dies, you can't even unlock your car. It's really prevalent with Teslas, where if the battery dies on the car basically gets bricked, is what they call it. And if your car is bricked, you can't even open the door to get your tennis racket out to go to tennis while you're waiting for the tow truck to come and take your car. So that's just some examples I've seen online, but that is why I would never get an electric car. My brother drives his electric car up here, and he has to stop at 4 electric stations on the way back down to Jersey because it's below zero out or below 10 degrees. And it's just insane. I jokingly say it all the time. When my 2023 Chevy in 30 years from now is sitting in the woods somewhere, a kid's going to see it and it's not going to be anything. It's never going to be like that old timey, like, oh, let's pull it out of the woods and restore it, because you have to be an electronics PhD to figure out how to start a car like that. I mean, there are some guys, there are some guys in our midst that just completely understand that, but I'm sure there's so much technology in a car, a modern car, that once it starts getting messed up, there's nothing you can do about it. So we're Gen X, we understand.
As soon as cars got firmware, embedded software that cannot be seen by anybody that wrote, other than the person that wrote the software. As soon as that happened, what you're describing, now that piece of technology is doomed. Yeah. Like it can't be restored completely.
Yeah. That's what I was saying that time we had the conversation. Like, why doesn't Chevy just make a base model truck for $20,000 that has no electronics in it, that has a transistor radio that just picks up air? Is there still radio? Do they transmit radio through the air anymore? I don't even know.
Yeah, they do.
You know, but people that are born right now, young people that are born right now, that are growing up right now, are only going to know this. They're not going to be able to wrench on their own cars. It's not even going to be part of the culture. They're not even going to be able to. There'll be a time where to set up a workshop, it's like, what are the, like, making it 2045 or 2050? What are the top three tools you should get in your wood shop? Oh, you got to get yourself a CNC machine. Definitely need a laser. You know, like the bandsaw, table saw is not even going to be part of the equation anymore.
Right.
And we're in the middle of it. We're in the middle of being like the telephone connected to the wall generation, to the cell phone in the hand all the time generation. But you think of a kid, we're sliding into that. Like, for instance, as far as fabrication goes, I'm helping Ryan make a whole bunch of flats for an upcoming trade show. He's tapped into this trade show company and they're leaning on him to make a lot of stuff. And he occasionally enlists me to help him. And whereas 7-8 years ago, we would have slid 400 sheets of plywood through a table saw. He's like, we were talking about the other thing, because it's just easier to throw the plywood on the CNC machine and cut all the long straights on the CNC machine. It takes longer, but they'll be exactly. We don't have to wrestle it. We're not going to get splinters in our palms. We don't have to throw it around. But the convenience of just throwing one sheet of plywood on and then collecting all the pieces a half hour later.
Yeah.
Makes life so much easier. But when the CNC machine, if, for instance, might have a glitch, we didn't update the firmware, then we got to go back to the table saw. You grab that part. I'll grab this part. Well, oh, let's go back to the other factory side. We messed up this side. You know, that whole thing. It's
on the table saw. You can just put on a new belt and you're good to go again.
Yeah, I recognize that this sounds very old man like, and you're right. It kind of is.
It's our generation. Like, we're Gen X.
At the same time,
we're bridging up a lot of gaps.
I think part of maturing and becoming older is the clarity of realizing that you don't actually know it all, and being able to look back at the generation before you and go like, "Oh, now I see why they were complaining about that." And I don't think that's necessarily becoming more curmudgeon-y. I think it's more like clarity and maybe some maturity to realize that you don't know it all, and you can see how some things get better with time, some things get worse with time, but having the clarity to understand that. I think that when a lot of people give the, like, you know, get off my lawn kind of like, oh, they're just at that point in life where they start complaining about everything. Yeah, and you can decide whether to complain about things or not, but also getting a different perspective on why things are better, why things are worse, why things are different than they were when you were a certain previous age. I think it's important and maybe shouldn't be dismissed. And so when I look at the generation before us and listen to the things that they complain about, or the generation before them, listen to the things that they complain about, they were going through the same thing that we're going through now. Seeing good stuff fall away, being replaced by things that are less tangible, less, you know, customizable, less hands-on. They saw it in a different way than the generation after them saw it, in a different way than we're seeing it, in a different way than our kids and the next generation will see it. So, you know, it sounds like we're complaining, and I guess maybe we are, but I think it's about more than just being unhappy about how things have changed out from under us. It's about accessibility, in my mind. Would you agree with that?
Well, I've another point I wanted to make. I'm not sure if I'm answering your question directly or not, but what happens with me personally is you get so many choices, and this happens, I think I've said this, so many choices with the Sirius radio, the this, what do I want to listen to? Do I want to listen to Constant News? Do I want to put on my favorite podcast? I drive in silence most of the time. Just because I got to fiddle with my phone. I got to find Sirius radio. I can't even find FM radio on my car dashboard. It's buried.
It's so convenient that it's inconvenient.
There's so many choices. I drive in silence most of the time. That's how I know exactly what's going wrong with my car. I'm like, oh, the wheel sounds out of balance. Like, what was that? Oh, the floorboard is going open and down and open and down on my new electronic car because the back door wasn't closed all the way. So as you drive, the thing goes, wah, wah, wah. That's my kick out step board. What is that called? The running board on my car is electronic. Yeah. So it, if the door isn't closed all the way, it doesn't know whether to be up or down. So it just goes, you're driving, it goes, wah. Out, in, out. And I got to like wait to pull over to like close the back door so the car knows.
About a month ago,
go ahead.
I was coming back from the lake house. It's an hour drive. And I'm always listening to either music or an audiobook, always. And I had this problem with a project. I was just like, you know what? I'm going to take the whole hour drive and just have the radio off. And I came up with so many ideas.
It's exactly why I drive and I just kind of ruminate on various ideas. But it's the
such
same
a
thing.
Great trick.
In the summertime, when I walk from the house to the workshop, and I'm not complaining, I don't mind walking because it's exercise. When I lived in the city, I lived on the third floor. So 400 times a day, I ran up the stairs. So I stayed in good shape. And so now it's the same thing. I walk to the shop and it goes downhill and I walk home and it's uphill and it's not that big of a draft where you feel it, but I have a 4x4. I have the side by side. I can even drive my car down there. And I'm like, do I want to mess with starting the 4x4? I just walk. So I have all these like modes of transportation and I walk all the time because there's no technology involved. You're not going to run out of gas or the battery's going to die. Many times I just choose to take the simple path.
Well, David, lately. I think what you're saying is actually really important and probably bigger than what you meant. But I think a lot of times with the way technology and media is now, we unintentionally have input happening all the time. And we do that a lot of times because, not me personally, but I think a lot of people force input in all the time because they're afraid of not having something to fill their mind. Because I think when their mind is idle, it's very easy to go to worry. It's very easy to go to anxiety and to let some negative thing fill the spot when it's quiet, right? I think that's a legit thing for people. And so you can avoid that by having some sort of input all the time that just allows you to keep your mind occupied and you don't have to end up focusing on your worry or on whatever. But you're right. When you cut off that input for just a little while, it allows your brain to go to a place that it's not allowed to go most of the time because it's occupied. And that can be a creative space. It can be rest. It can be whatever. And I understand why people don't do that and why we've gotten into the habit of not doing that. But man, it can be so good for us to just be in quiet and to be in not input and not even necessarily to replace that input with like, I got to be creative and I got to be productive.
Just peacefulness.
Not input is good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So. Let your brain have a break. But boredom is so uncomfortable. Especially in the social media age where we've talked about this before. You stand in line at the grocery store. Don't pull out your phone. It's so hard for me to not pull out my phone. You know, maybe there's some good news in my email. Maybe so-and-so posted on Facebook or Instagram. And it is so uncomfortable to be bored, but so many good things come out of boredom. So many great ideas have come out of, it feels like ideas come from nowhere. But they don't, they come from somewhere because there's an empty space in your brain that your brain is trying to fill up. And sometimes good ideas come out of that.
Absolutely. We're running a little bit long, but we didn't talk about something that I want to talk about real quick.
Go.
Quickly, what is a convenience, let's say in the workshop, let's narrow it down a little bit. When it comes to your job, what is a convenience that you avoid and why? Or that you have avoided. I know for me, I'll just start since I asked the question. I was working on the siding and it's cold and I was trying to wear gloves and nail siding nails into this little flange that's up against the wall, but next to a lifted part. And you got to put two fingers and hold the thing in there and nail it to start the nail and then move your hand out of the way. And if you smash your finger and it's cold, it hurts. And then I had gloves that like I accidentally nailed through the finger of the glove, not my finger, but through the glove. And I pulled my hand out of the glove and it was nailed to the wall.
No.
I mean, it was no big deal. But like, as soon as that happened the first day, I was like, I need to get a nailer. I need to get a siding nailer that will sink the nail. You know, you got to leave like a 32nd of an inch so it's not tight against the wall. I got to go start looking for this nailer to do that. I'll do that tonight. I forgot to do it. The next day, I started nailing these things again. And through about 20 minutes of figuring out, I realized, oh, well, this is how I need to hold my hand to hold the nail to get it started. Always come at it from this angle. And once I get it started, then I move my hand and then I can finish it. I switch hands with the hammer and I figured out a process, right? Which I would not have figured out if I had just gone and spent several hundred dollars on a nailer that I would use for this one project.
Yeah.
And it was like, yes, it's going to take way longer to put all this siding up, nailing everything by hand. But I mean, it's not, I save money and like I figured out how to do something that was frustrating me.
Also, and that's just, you that's love problem recent, solving. You
know, yeah, yeah, exactly.
There's one little bug that I have is I try and keep my spoil board. This is like an old school, new school problem. I try and keep my spoil board on my CNC machine free of scratches. So the spoil board is meant to be spoiled, as for the name, but...
Oh, that's why they...
So when on my CNC machine, I try my best to not cut all the way through the material. What I'll do is I'll just... If I need to cut a perimeter of something out, I always say, I can always go to the bandsaw. So what I'll do is I'll make a mark. I won't even leave tabs. I'll just cut it. Like I just made all these sewer caps. I made all these sewer caps. I offered them on my Patreon. I'll offer them on regular Instagram shortly. But it's a 20-inch circle. So I only cut halfway through the MDF or partway down. And then I take the piece off. I take it to the bandsaw. I cut it all apart. And now there's a little lip. And I just flush router it. So I could always go to the bandsaw and use traditional tools and take 1 to 3 minutes to finish it versus constantly putting a circle on the tabletop or cutting tabs. So I even did it with the belt buckles that I made. I can cut all the way through the full perimeter, but I can just mark a line to go, that's the bandsaw line. Take it to the bandsaw. Cause I don't want to cut through the table. I don't want to cut through the material and then cut the table. Cause then the reason is it's partly because I want the vanity of it to look smooth, but then you have a million lines that just capture dust and dirt. And that's why I try and keep the table as clean as possible. So the idea of knowing that I have the bandsaw and the table saw right there to process material, that's a funny thing. In the beginning of the CNC revolution, a lot of my friends that had school spaces or a couple of my friends, they're like, I'm going to get a CNC machine. I'm like, well, you don't have a table saw, you don't have a bandsaw. I go, just be prepared. How are you going to break the wood apart to put it on the CNC machine? You're going to have to get material cut custom for your class at the right size of the bed of your CNC machine. So don't forget that. Oh, what does that mean? I'm like, you'll figure it out. Get a machine. Otherwise, it's just going to sit. It's going to sit there like a treadmill. You're just going to pile tools on it.
Sit there like a treadmill.
So that's one convenience I forego, just because I just want to keep the CNC machine nice. I don't want it to get all scrappy with a million cut lines in it. And if I did need to do a cut through, I'll usually just throw a temporary spoil board on. So I'll screw that to the tabletop. And then if I'm going to run a bunch of little small parts, I'll just run it on that and then take everything away and then go back to zero again and always keep the top of my table. And never, I'm thinking about doing a CNC tips video, but I don't know, it'll probably get 8 views, but I can't stand these clippy do's that they sell with CNC machines and the T-tracks. Oh. I never use them.
I don't use them.
It's like, oh, you meant to, it's like they try and solve all these problems. These clippy do's, these screwy do things, they're horrible. And I'm always afraid I'm just going to break a screw tip off. I mean, a cutting tip. I'm going to break a router bit off, passing over it.
Yeah.
I mean, you run one thing and you know what your pattern is, you know where your rapids are, but these screwy do, tracky do things, I can't stand track tables.
Those are all Scooby-Doo's younger cousins.
Scooby-Doo track, Scooby-Doo. Lever, screw knobs. It's, all that goes right in the garbage. I never used it ever in my life.
David, do you have a convenience you're avoiding? Are you avoiding
a big one? Okay. So, and maybe, so I'm very influenced by Jack White, White Stripes. And when the White Stripes were around, Jack White has famously said many times that I play this guitar that is really hard to play. The strings are way off the frets. It doesn't stay in tune, but I have to fight with it. And because I fight with it, I create what I create. And so my fight is I don't love tools like Adam Savage loves tools. And so I don't have any tools on the wall. I don't have, everything is in a drawer.
I noticed that. You don't have anything hanging up.
Nothing. Because it's not about the tools for me. So it is very inconvenient for me to have to walk over, open a drawer, bring that tool all the way back to the bench. So everything, every tool that I get out is very intentional. And it creates this slight little delay. And there's a little bit of time to think when you have that delay. If everything is just right there all the time, you're not going to think through the process. You're just going to grab the tool off the wall or, you know, if it's in a pile on the bench and just do the thing. But if you have a moment to think, if you have a moment of like, wait, maybe there's a better way. Maybe I should do it this way. I don't know. So, tools are in a very inconvenient location for me because it's not about the tool. It's about what I'm doing. So I don't like looking at tools.
Yeah. I never really thought about that, but that makes a lot of sense. Like I don't have tools on the wall because I like looking at them. It's more just convenience, you know, it's like easy to get to. Mm-hmm. I never really thought about that.
There's, you know, I look at, Jimmy's Old Shop or Stumpy Nubs, and there's the wall of tools and everything where, and it looks so cool. I'm like, that dude's a maker. Look at all those awesome tools. But it's just not what I want for me.
Yeah. Cool. Well, I'm going to thank our Patreon supporters while you figure out something to recommend. Huge thanks to everybody over at Patreon that supports the show at every different level. We're really grateful for all of the support. So thank you for being here. Big thanks, huge thanks to our top supporters. They go above and beyond more than they need to, but we're really grateful for them. That's A Pretty Big Deal, Inc., Albers Woodworks, Chad from Mancrafting, Chris McCormick, Nick Ryan, Odin Leather Goods, Pete Rondo, Rich at Low End Design, Scott at Daddy Yourself DIY, The New Jinky Workshop, Warren Works, and Works by Solo. Excuse me. But also, people like Jacob McAllister, who's been supporting for over 2 years. Thanks, Jacob. There's a lot of people that help us out that have supported the show for a short amount of time, a really long amount of time, and we appreciate all of it. And everybody gets the after show, no matter how much or how long you've been supporting. So if you want to go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and then you'll get a little URL for the after show up in the corner, and you can put that in your podcast player and hear more stuff from us after this show, which is why we call it the after show, because it's after this show. And today I'm going to tell you about my new 3D printer that I got. And I'm sure there'll be some other behind the scenes secret future somethings from everybody. That's usually what we do. So I have a recommendation, which I don't know if you guys would actually be interested in, but it's pretty cool. And I've probably talked about it before, actually. But it's a YouTube channel called Brick Technology. And it's the videos, I haven't watched all of them. There's a bunch of them. But basically, it's a guy that builds Lego, or a person. I don't know. You never see the person. It builds Lego contraptions, like machines. But they're not simple machines. These are complex machines, and they're usually to solve a problem. So he'll take, the problem will be like how to build a Lego thing to climb a wall. And so it's like a vehicle, and it'll have a little 2 brick tall wall, which is like an inch, right? And he'll have to get it to climb that. And if it doesn't work, then they rebuild the thing on screen. It's just like time lapsed of now it's got suspension, and so we can get over it. And then he raises the wall. I say he, I, like I said, I don't know who this is. The wall gets raised, And so the contraption keeps increasing to match the increased challenge, and it just goes crazy.
That's
and it's
cool.
always over the top. And seeing somebody, I don't have any idea how you would think through building, coming up with the ideas, much less building the thing to accomplish these tasks. It's pretty wild. I don't know.
These videos are all, they're like 10 million views every video.
Yeah.
This is insane.
And I don't know that there are things that you could apply to the rest of your life or to any other thing other than Lego, but
it's called the Brick Man.
Brick technology.
Yeah.
Right.
These are awesome.
It's really fun just to see somebody, you know, it's like it keeps one upping itself the whole time. Mm-hmm. I think that's part of the interesting thing about it. Yeah. What you got?
What was I going to say? Oh, when I was a kid, so when Saturday Night Live started, I remember when Saturday Night Live started, I was about 7 or 8 years old, and my dad's like, oh, there's a great new fun comedy show on tonight. It's late, too late for you guys. But so as I began to have sleepovers with my cousin, who's my age, we would always stay up late and watch Saturday Night Live. And then after Saturday Night Live, I can't remember what came first, but right after Saturday Night Live ended at 1 a.m., Don Kirshner's rock concert would come on. And then for a little while, SCTV came on right after Saturday Night Live. So it'd be Saturday Night Live, then SCTV. This is like before 1980. So the reason I'm bringing this up is because Catherine O'Hara passed away, and there's been so many great online clips of Catherine O'Hara in the 70s, and just the SCTV cast in general has been so fun to watch all these old videos that come up. I don't even know where you'd see them. I've seen them just clip after clip on Instagram from random accounts, but check out Google SCTV, Second City Television, and it was just so many funny spoofs. And the funny thing is it's in this point in history where it's the 70s, so they're making fun of stuff from like the 40s to the 70s, that little block of 30 years. So there's references there that some kids will never in a million years understand what they're talking about. But even if you don't understand the reference or the origin of the make the mockery, it's still really funny. Like the Brooke Shields show where Catherine O'Hara pretends to be Brooke Shields, but her mother is the host, and she's just a bratty little like money pinion of the whole thing. And she's like all bratty. And then there's the two farmers that blow stuff up because they're bored. They'll have guests on, and if the guest's boring, they blow them up. John Candy and Joe Flaherty and all these characters are really, really, really ingrained in my childhood sense of humor. And it's been just such a nostalgic, fun thing to watch all these clips coming back and seeing Catherine O'Hara as like a 20-year-old doing these bits, and all these guys, Dave Thomas and all these characters. So if you don't know what Second City Television is, if you're that young, go take a look.
Nice.
There you go.
So mine is a YouTube channel called Craig Hill. They're a small company. They make like everyday carry type stuff. I like my pockets empty, so I don't have any everyday carry things. But man, their designs are phenomenal. And there's their most recent video is called "We Spent 4 Years Designing the Perfect Lid," and it's just they're working on this, kind of like it's basically a credit card holder in a Zippo format, but they needed to create a different hinge for it. And it's a great video, so you can see the process.
That knife is revolutionary that they made.
And then there's a second video of the knife that they make. I don't even know where to begin on how to describe with words how the knife mechanism works, but it is just absolutely beautiful. And when I have some money, I'm going to buy this knife because it is just stunning.
It's such a great, great, great concept.
It is on my wish list.
I follow them on Instagram, and the videos just showing how they get to a mechanism, a final mechanism, it's so cool to see all the iterations and how logical they think through the motions of things. I didn't even realize they had a YouTube channel.
It's not something I get to experience, and I don't think you guys get to experience it very often either, because we just make one thing and we move on. We don't get to perfect the one thing, and to see the iteration and the teams of people working on it and the thought process behind it is just fantastic.
Oh, speaking of, did I tell you guys about the the visual piano video. Oh, man. I'm going to have to find it. There's this guy, and I think he owns a design studio. But basically, they made this video about him making a piano where you can... You ever seen the animated videos where like somebody's playing a piano and then there's LEDs behind them that there's some sort of a thing? Every time they press a key, something shoots off down the LEDs or on the screen. He made that in real life. So he ended up with a water tank vertically above the piano. And every time you press a key, there's like a poof of colored smoke in the water that goes up. And so the video is about the process to get to that final result and all the different things. But I realized from watching it that it's the same guy, the same company that made the, like, did you see the video a couple of years ago about the trash cans that rove around the office and pick up people's trash? It's that same group, which is just crazy. Like, the stuff they make is nuts. So it's the same kind of thing where really overcomplicated designs, but they take years and years to get to it. I'll put a link in the description if I can find this piano thing
again. I just remembered, and I remembered another thing called it's about the Daisy Red Ryder BB gun. But this whole channel, what's the name of this channel? I just put it in the link. It's called The Walls of History and the Icons of History TV. It has two names. I don't know. Or maybe they're just both linked. The Walls of History. It's such a weird channel. I think it's 100% AI. So I don't know if you could trust the stories, the history stories on all these iconic brands like the Daisy gun or Crossman air rifles or Duncan yo-yos. It's all these history stories. Some of the videos have 200 views. Some of them have 30,000 views right next to it. So I don't understand at all what this channel is like, literally from outer space. And the voiceover is like this creepy guy that tells the story like this. And you can hear him say like the one word, like he'll say the one word in the wrong context. And you know, you're talking to a robot. No. You never hear them. And that's the crazy thing is like, whenever you're listening to AI, you're like, this guy's such a good orator. And then all of a sudden he'll say the word completely wrong. And you're like, oh, it's AI. That's why I haven't heard him take one breath the entire time.
All right, so I found it. So real quick, the channel is called HTX Studio, and the video is, we spent 3 years building a piano that lets you see music. And the amount of effort that they go to get this thing to work is just wild. So I'll let you check it out.
All right.
Cool. You guys got anything else?
That's it.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you. We'll
catch you next time.
Thank you. Love you.